the pointer. Though you say it is, there is nothing which is can affirm. Though you say it is not, there is nothing that is not can negate. When is and is not are left behind, and gain and loss are forgotten, then you are clean and naked, free and at ease. But tell me, what is in front of you and what in back of you? If there is a patch-robed monk who comes forward and says, in front is the Buddha shrine and the main gate, behind is the abbot's sleeping room and private quarters, tell me, does this man have eyes or not? If you can judge this man, I'll allow that you have personally seen the ancients and the case. Vimalakirti asked Manjushri, what is a bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality? Manjushri said, according to what I think, in all things, no words, no speech, no demonstration, and no recognition, to leave behind all questions and answers. This is entering the Dharma gate of non-duality. Then Manjushri asked Vimalakirti, we have each already spoken. Now you should tell us, good man, what is a bodhisattva's entry into the Dharma gate of non-duality? Shweto said, what did Vimalakirti say? He also said, completely exposed. The verse, bah, to old Vimalakirti. Out of compassion for living beings, he suffers an empty affliction. Lying ill in Vaisali, his whole body withered and emaciated. Manjushri, the teacher of seven Buddhas, comes to the single room that's been swept repeatedly. He asks about the gate of non-duality. Then Vimalakirti leans and falls. He doesn't lean and fall. The golden-haired lion has no place to look. At the end of our first chant this evening, or this afternoon, this morning, whatever it is. this is the first day of Sesshin. What do we say? May we realize this true meaning. May we realize this true meaning. And so, what is this? What did Vimalakirti say? The air conditioner was on and I didn't quite catch it.
Louder.
imagining that though we are all different, we are all not that completely different. This has been a sesshin, hasn't it? And here we are in this moment, at this part of the ups and downs, the ins and outs, moments of maybe great spaciousness, other moments of incredible darkness, no way to find the doorway out. Tenderized by our lives. And we come here with great courage and conviction, together with the support of the Sangha, giving ourselves to this vow to be still and upright, and to not turn away to receive wholeheartedly and what is this? Sometimes it is a great joy and great laughter. I don't know about you, but by this point in Sesshin, I am ridiculously easily tickled. It takes almost nothing to make me laugh. And, okay, that's not a real journey for me, but still. Even closer to the surface. And hard to tell what's appropriate and inappropriate to laugh at. And sometimes for me, these places that are so constricted and so painful and so uncomfortable. And again, I don't know about you, but I can't help but break out my toolbox and try to find some fix. But like a good and loving teacher, these places will not let me go. Inviting me so benevolently to meet them. And so everything changes. One of the things that we may notice as we sit still and upright and receive our lives is just that. Everything is constantly changing. This great vivid boil arising and arising and arising ceaselessly. What is this? And who is it happening to? And maybe we have the opportunity to stumble into, luckily, not taking this arising quite so personally. And instead, taking it completely personally. This great fear is us. In this moment of fearfulness, no separation, not two, woven completely from. And what is that like? To let ourselves dissolve into this, like the grain of salt that jumps into the ocean to see what it tastes like. We wake up and realize that we are in free fall. And we can't tell if we jumped or were pushed. Or maybe the cliff was never really there. But it is vibrant and lively and unrelenting. And we can glory in it. Or we can rest in it. And it is happening, arising and arising and arising. We get sick. We are sick. Because the world is sick. We are well. Because the world is well. We are lost with no way out. Trying all the medicine. We search for ourselves. And can't quite seem to find her. In the verse it says that out of compassion for living beings, he suffers an empty affliction. Out of compassion for living beings. And this is our Bodhisattva vow. That we come here and we do this. We are still and upright. And we make this vow to not turn away, to meet our lives exactly the way that they show up, with courage and heart and love. Not for ourselves. We meet this hurt for all those who hurt. We meet this fear with all those who are afraid. We meet this shame for all those who are ashamed. We meet this laughter for all those who laugh. Do not fall for the story that you are separate and alone. Your heart is the heart. We need you to not turn away. May we realize this true meaning.
So I'll be giving the second part of this lovely Taisho that James started. So it's not the Dharma dialogue yet. This is still the Taisho. And I will try to project my voice better. Thank you. James reminding us that we are here in this part of the Sesshin. Quite incredible, really, that we are here. And this vivid boiling up that James talked about may be heating up more and more each day. And here, just thoroughly cooking at just the right temperature. So for me, this boiling up is the last Taisho on this case that we have so lovingly explored all week. And I thought it might be exciting to talk about the last word of the case. And this is Shuedo commenting on the case. And his last word is exposed. What does he mean by this, exposed? And our friend Hakuin here gives us a little bit of his view. He says, "Tisk old Vimlakirti, he exposes Vimlakirti as a thieving rascal." Vimlakirti as a thieving rascal. So I wonder if any of us have encountered any thieving rascals during this sesshin, who have taken everything away from us. Maybe one of the teachers. Maybe the crescent moon in the sky in the morning. Maybe those darn koi that keep swimming in everyone's thoughts and in the backyard too. So everything being stolen from us, our ideas of who we are and what we're doing here and who everyone else is and what we're going to do later and how we're going to use this. So all of those things, the thieving rascals have taken away. And what is that like? When there's nothing left. Exposed. Maybe many of us feel a little overexposed. Sometimes we talk about being over-meditated. Happens at Sesshin. So maybe now feeling, ooh, way, way too exposed. Nothing to hide behind. Nothing to protect. And some nervousness can arise from that because we have cultivated for so long, through no fault of our own, but cultivate our identities and our views, and we can hold them pretty tightly. And then when they're taken away, that seems like way too dangerous. To be vulnerable, this vulnerability can feel very raw and very, very much not what we're accustomed to. I'd like to suggest to you that there is strength in this vulnerability. It does not have to be a place of weakness and fear, but exactly the opposite can manifest. This strength that comes from nothing left to protect, nothing left to defend. Free to respond to each speck of dust and not become its partner. So this great freedom to be found in exposure when everything's been taken away. When my children were young, I used to read them a story, and it's about two men who discovered a treasure. And one of the men was bad, and he stole the treasure. And the story is about how he was constantly afraid that the treasure would be stolen back by the man he found it with. And so he increasingly built barriers and walls and provided munitions, and until finally in his old age he's living at the top of a mountain surrounded by walls, alone with all kinds of armaments, guarding his treasure. And sometimes it can feel like that for us, right? This treasure that we think is so necessary to protect and defend against, no matter what. And the other man, the one whose treasure was stolen, the end of the story shows him in his easy chair with grandchildren climbing all over him as he reads them a story. And it would be easy to get caught up in this notion of, this is the way of ease, just, you know, let go of everything, nothing to defend, you know. And again, we create these conceptual prisons for ourselves, right? One of the many lovely things that I heard people say during the Sesshin from you speaking out was when Steve Wallace said this line, which maybe he thought was just a throwaway line, but it's been so vivid for me, and he said, "It's just what's on order." So whatever is arising is just what's on order. And last night was my chance to pick the sutra for the evening. And I went up to our Eno and I gave him my choice, and he said to me, "Oh, an excellent choice." You know, like the waiter who said, "Yes, you picked the chef's best creation." And sometimes we do get to order what we want, right? but not always. Often it's just what's on order. So, not the grandfather in the easy chair with the children climbing all over him. Maybe something completely different will be on order and is on order right now. But that is this freedom to be with just what's on order, or just this that's on order. That is the great invitation and the great freedom. So one more thing that Hakuin says in talking about this last word, exposed, he says, Vimalakirti's heart, exposed, Vimalakirti's heart. So Vimalakirti's heart, and your heart, and my heart, and the great heart of the universe, in its strength and fullness, and in its freely responding to all the dust motes that arise. So, whatever is on order, an excellent choice. Thank you. So now we'll sit comfortably and have our Dharma dialogue.
My baby sister, Debbie, she called me 2 weeks ago and said, well, you know, what's up? I said, well, I'm going to Sachin, the Buddhist assembly retreat, in 2 weeks. And she goes, oh, yeah, what will that be like? Now, I gave a little more background information. Debbie, she's 14 years younger than me, and she's an ordained Baptist minister. So she has interest in these things. So she said, well, tell me, what is God to a Zen Buddhist? Good luck with that one. And so I did my best. And then she said, well, tell me, what is this non-duality thing you keep talking about in Zen Buddhism? And again, wow, good luck with that. So that's sort of a preface to really what I wanted to tell you with that. You mentioned humor as yeah, coming to the surface. For me, it's been this. My heart's been breaking for the past 2 days. Which, you know, I am, it's also been great trying to fail humor. So, anyway, so I wanted you all to know that I'm alive. Breathing, thinking, crying, human being, and that's all.
Wonderful. Yeah. And lovely that your sister and you, right,
yes,
talk to each other about such tender and deep things, and even though your language doesn't quite meet each other, you know, maybe it's just, I'm alive, I'm breathing. And we cry together.
Well, she thought that, don't we tend to be a little bit passionless and compassionless? Mm-hmm. I said, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. And then I foolishly tried to illustrate the koan. Is that the person?
Pang. Layman Pang, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yes, about when he gets knocked in the ditch in a cart, and his daughter walks in, jumps in after Yale's scream, help me, help me. She jumps in the ditch and looks at eyeball to eyeball and says, I'm here, father, or something like that. And he says, you're embarrassing me, just help me out of the ditch. So of course Debbie didn't have a clue what I was talking about. I barely knew what I was talking about. So anyway, I would not use a colon. Go going forward.
And it's so great because in some ways, you know, your demonstration, you know, the Genjo Koan, right? You know, like, where is God in Buddhism? You know, and my heart has been breaking for 2 days. Ray.
I think this is more a comment about yesterday and talking about getting rid of our projects, our fixing ourselves and changing ourselves and, you know, whatever our projects tend to be. And, you know, being, as Diane says, exposed. And for me, it's important to understand that whatever projects I've taken on, whatever strategies I've attempted to fix myself or to fix someone else, has been to not suffer, has been to somehow, you know, make sense of the world so that I don't suffer as much. And so when I let go of my projects, my fixing other people, of doing, you know, doing for them, when I let go of all that and get completely exposed and raw and vulnerable, it's sweet when I'm, you know, seeing the beautiful flowers and the koi fish. But when I go to work on Monday, you know, and I see the suffering in people's eyes, in the way they talk, in the way they walk, in the way they smoke their cigarettes, in the way they carry themselves, in the stories they tell. Yet, where is, you know, if I'm not aware that I've made a vow to be naked, to be exposed, I will quickly use my old habits, my fixed projects. They're not far away, even though, you know, this weekend I've dared to, okay, let go of some of them. It's been a very supportive environment. But I don't live here very long. You know, my life is out there. And so this is a real challenge for me to allow myself to be broken, to be vulnerable, to feel the pain and the, you know, the horror of people's lives. That too. And this is what we've all protected ourselves against. And we say, oh, so not taken lightly, this being exposed.
Thank you. So agree. You know, this work is a courageous heart, right? Courageous heart is Ray's one of his name, his Dharma name, courageous heart. And I'm very touched by what you say. All of us here, by showing up and staying in it, by really staying in it, and staying with the vows, right? Staying with our vows, staying with our practices and giving ourselves to them, entrusting ourselves to the Sesshin, to the Sangha. It takes a lot of faith and a lot of courage. And it's scary and hard, and sometimes it really, really, really hurts.
There's this image of the bodhisattva in hell. I don't know exactly where the story comes from, but the like a fortune teller comes to the master and says that the master is going to be reborn in heaven. The master bursts out in tears. because, you know, who will teach all the people in hell? Yeah, so quite a tradition, you know, the Bodhisattva who goes to help for people. And of course, for us in our practice, you know, the entry gate is right here. You know, we go to hell in ourselves and serve. Because first we must know this before we can do that. And we do travel through heaven in a little bubble of hell.
You know, this broken heart is not a failing of practice, and it's not a failing of non-duality.
Cheryl.
On Tuesday, I had a complete meltdown, and I was right exactly with Bill on that. Completely, I mean, I was thinking, oh my God, what if the Dharma is everything else but me? I'm included. And I just realized by what you guys are saying now that I was sitting not just for me feeling that. There are a lot of people in the world who are feeling excluded, who are feeling forgotten and abandoned. And so I'm very, very grateful for this practice and being able to be here with you.
Thank you.
You know, what I hear in that is by having felt that yourself, you now have compassion for anyone who feels that. It becomes a gift of practice. It doesn't feel like it at the time.
So
remember the back of the room.
Yeah. What you were saying that you know, this idea of dissolving into just this, or exposed, mm-hmm. right? You know, and in the verse to this koan, the well swept room. And here we are presented with all these forms this week. And each of these forms, to me, it's like this big flashing, you know, neon sign, like, this way to the well-swept room. Right? And this is what we're doing. We're presented with these forms, and all we really have to do is embody these forms. And we don't have to worry about it, you know. Let the forms do the work. We just have to pour ourselves into them and, you know, let come what may. And it's, you know, in a sense, it's the easiest thing in the world. And in another sense, my aching body says not so much. And so, yeah, this way to the well-swept room.
And I would suggest that these forms, right, are not just here on the sesshin, right? There is the form of the alarm clock waking you up for work and the coffee pot pouring and the coffee pouring into your tea. And so all of these forms that support you here manifest as forms supporting you everywhere. So lovely to see all the bodhisattvas arising from the cracks of our necessity everywhere, every moment. Thank you.
I just want to say something in appreciation for the great size and stability of the container that we have made with the forms at Sesshin. Not only the laughter and the humor and the brokenheartedness and the pain, and sometimes the boredom and nothing much happening. I have found myself at times at Sesshin getting into a more painful than thou competition. My heart isn't breaking as much as that person next to me. I must be doing something wrong. And that's now turned into the humorous part of it when I see that happening. But it holds the boredom and the nothing and the as well as all of the rest of us.
You know, the notion of a well-swept room, right? It can become anything. It can become, a well-swept room is, bright, shining samadhi. Or, it's crying and grief. Or, it's boredom. It's whatever arises. And we just keep turning toward it, or seeing it, just being it. That's the well-swept.
I just want to follow up really briefly on that. There's a story that I won't tell the whole story of, but it's a Buddhist story from way back. And part of what happens in the story is these two old monks are just constantly sweeping the leaves out of the temple. That's all they do. They just sweep the leaves out of the temple, and the leaves blow back in. And they and someone who's been sent in to sit with them all become, fully realized. And so it's not the room, it's the sweeping.
Thank you. Carol?
I want to go back to something you said, just sort of fell off the end of a comment in response to Ray.
Speak up.
Now, I'll probably misphrase this, and it may not be what you meant, but I heard you say, we come here, and first we deal with this, and then we deal with the world. And I just wanted to raise from my position that maybe it doesn't quite happen like that. It's a little bit like Dogen when he talks about does a fish have to explore every inch of the ocean before it starts to swim? And I think that my practice has been more like that.
Thank you, Carol. Yeah, we stumble forward with what we got, right? Yeah, and that's like we're doing our best. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
And no completion, right? Like no, right?
Yeah, because if we wait till we got our shit together.
At least for me, I mean that. The first time I've been on Sesshin, and I can't tell you how many times, particularly on Tuesday, I was in my car going home, saying, this is not for me. Thought I was into this Zen stuff. I love the Tao, but forget this Zen. I have shared some, thoughts with some of my teachers about some of the aspects of it. I really have to kind of sit with and listen to before I will necessarily say out loud, but that's okay. I'm learning that's what I need to do in order to find a path. And I just want to express my gratitude for my knowing that probably if I did leave, that it'd be okay to come back. Probably. But that you're here, and that like everyone, you just, like, it was a form. This container was not just a form, but it was a whole.
Mm-hmm.
All of this.
Yeah. I see a hand back there, but I don't see who it's attached to. Bill.
I prefer silence when it becomes uncomfortable. So I really wanted to thank you.
Say that again.
I really wanted to thank you for your comment.
What did you say first, though?
Oh, I prefer silence when it becomes uncomfortable. What I really said is better to be silent than people think you're a fool. Oh, that's what you made it up to. And open your mouth and prove their courage. I spent Tuesday like that, too.
You did.
And that was before I walked down through a hell I had no idea was there. Wonderful. Walk through hell and be full of wonder and find it wonderful. And so I think I'm very grateful to the Sangha, very grateful to this experience. Although we spend most of our time in silence, I walk away from here with this phrase in my head, which simply says, I'm not insane.
Yeah.
God is so good, the support is so wonderful. I feel all of these experiences are healthy and actually stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I love the tone of the way you sort of say it. It's like, oh, what fresh hell is this?
And I just have to add, in case everyone starts thinking, you know, Tuesday's way over, there's plenty of time for more fresh hell.
Or dark and crappy hells that you don't want.
And this opportunity, as you sort of thank each other for expressing this, you know, this, again, this great sort of bodhisattva vow of me too. You know, as we, oh yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Harry and then Bill.
I wanted to also second that. I, not at this session, but a couple of sessions ago, I quit Zen.
The laughter of recognition.
But one of the things that around that, I think when I was in Sesshin at the time, to me there was something about, well, you gotta, you know, beat something out of you. This is part of this like hardcore sort of thing. And what's been resonating for me is something you said, James, about you know, we are now made tender or raw. And I've just gotten the sense, I look around this room and I feel like these people don't need to be made any more tender or more raw. There's something else we're doing, and I think it's about reminding about our pliability and our own self-moldability, I think. That might get lost when we talk about what Ray was talking about, going back out and seeing the suffering in people's eyes, that maybe we start to get a little hardened and a little crusty, and it's here that kind of gets knocked off and changed. Maybe that's what hurts and feels tender, and not the my sense of, you know, tenderizing and being just like beaten down.
Yeah. So. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, Willie.
I just wanted to comment that we use these terms like container, box, or whatever. They seem to be, you know, talking about sashimi, like it's got this hard wall around it. And for me, it's sort of like a permeable number that I really have a hard time knowing when sashimi is over, when I leave here. It takes a long time for me to realize that. And when I come here, it's almost like, oh yeah, that's what we're doing here. That it's not so hard-edged. That whatever we do here, it seems to, well, you know, Graves, I go back to work too. One day and I don't have Ray's clientele, but I've got some assholes to deal with.
Lovingly.
I found that the more I come into these things, it's just like a pulse or something. I'm moving into the sashimi, I'm moving out of the sashimi, but there's no real heart into it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And so I think it's important to underline that, right? No hard end to sashim. Now is not an end to sashim. Sashim goes on, and this might be a good time for us to all go, like, dive right back in. Thank you.